Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride.
I'm really excited about today's episode because I got to talk to Paulina Cossette, owner of Acadia Editing Services. Paulina was a political science professor who left academia and started a successful academic editing business. Now, in addition to providing editing services, she teaches others how to launch their own academic editing business. If you're thinking about how to maximize your time during sabbatical, you're going to love this episode. We're going to pull back the curtain on academic editing and help you think about how working with an academic editor can free up your time for the things that matter most to you. And if you're someone who's thinking about starting a side business during your sabbatical, or you're thinking about leaving academia, then you'll learn all about the support Paulina offers in her group program, Becoming an Academic Editor. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Paulina, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited to talk to you today about two things, about working with an academic editor, because I think a lot of folks who are going on sabbatical probably don't know about academic editors, and it could be beneficial as they think about the things they want to get done during their sabbatical. And then the second thing I want to talk to you about is the support you provide to academics who want to start a side business in academic editing or coaching or consulting.
Yeah, that's, I think what you first said about a lot of people don't know or don't think to work with editors is a great point. When I was a political science professor, I had no idea that editors, copy editors, developmental editors, you know, that they existed. And it wasn't until I published my book just before I left academia that I learned that freelance copy editing was a thing. So I'm happy to talk about what that involves.
Great. Yeah, I think it's important to kind of, there are these unwritten things or things people don't talk about that maybe a lot of your colleagues are doing, but you don't know about, that could really kind of save you time and make you more efficient in the publishing process. So for sure, we're going to get to that. But first, I want to hear about your story. So you used to be a professor, and then you left academia, and now you run this business that provides both academic editing services, and you also teach people how to start their own academic editing business. So tell me more about your story and how you came to be doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, so I got my PhD in 2013, U.S. politics. I studied Congress. My dissertation was on bipartisanship in Congress, which is just sort of laughable now. It was a good dissertation, but not something that I enjoyed studying for the, you know, the years to follow. And so I think, you know, I tried working at different schools. I was successful in publishing. I had great teaching evaluations. I was doing all the things, but I was still just completely burnt out and overwhelmed. And I had my son in 2018. And after that, I was working 7 days a week. And I couldn't keep up. I was drowning in work and not getting any sleep. And my mother-in-law was diagnosed with lung cancer, and we were living across the country from family. And so that was sort of, that was my breaking point. And so in the summer of 2019, we sold our house. I quit my job. You know, it was terrifying. I was so full of anxiety, but I did it. And we moved to Maine, where our family is. And I didn't know what I was going to do, because like I said, I didn't realize that copy editing was a thing. And I thought, you know, after I worked with a freelance editor on my book through the publisher, I thought, well, I could try this for a little while, because I kept getting rejected from non-academic jobs, you know, saying I'm overqualified and all that. And one thing led to another. And, you know, I had a second child. And so it was really great because the hours were flexible and I was able to work as much or as little as I wanted. And over the last 5 years or so, I've been able to match and then exceed the salary that I was making as faculty. And so it's been a lot of fun. You know, I work 30 hours a week. I take a ton of time off in the summer to be with the kids and to travel. I don't know how I stayed in academia so long, but I'm glad that I got out.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I've listened to your podcast a bit, and I know that one of the things you talk about is the fact that when you go on vacation, you are like fully present with your family. And I think that is something that a lot of academics struggle with, right? I think this might have been in one of your recent episodes, or maybe I heard it something else or somewhere else. The academia is so flexible. You get to work 18 hours a day, but you get to choose those 18 hours or something.
Yeah, that was my last episode. I've seen those memes before. It's like academia is so flexible. You can work 7 days a week, but you get to choose which 7 days you want to work, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, I remember because, before we lived in Maine, a lot of our vacations we would spend coming up here to visit family. And I remember my father-in-law one time saying to me, and he wasn't saying it in a mean way. He felt bad for me. He was saying, "Darling, you never come here without your laptop," you know? And that moment just stuck with me because, as all academics know, vacations are time that we spend catching up on research. And yeah, no, I don't do that anymore. I put my vacation responder on and I don't feel guilty about it either.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what a great, it just sounds like it would be completely terrifying to leave a tenure track position and kind of not know where you're going, but you've kind of built this amazing thing in a relatively short amount of time, kind of even while there's a lot going on in the world that might make you, might make a person feel like it was impossible to start a business and be successful in it. So that's amazing.
Yeah, I never imagined that I would be a business owner. I grew up with a single mom who made $15,000 a year. She washed boats in Florida. And I had a really negative outlook of business owners. It was the old white guys that played golf, and I never thought that I could do that, right? That I would be brave enough or smart enough or that I had the knack for business. And I can say now that owning a business today is very different from that stereotype. There are so many women like you who are out there doing it, and it's not like you're starting a restaurant, right? Where you have to get all these licenses and have a giant business loan and you have to hire people. And you can start small and do it as a side hustle the way you are doing it and see if you like it and see where it goes. And if you decide you want to take it full time, then you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, exactly. It minimizes the risk that way. And it's kind of like all you need is a laptop and maybe a Zoom subscription or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
So like we said before, I just feel like working with an academic editor isn't something most faculty talk about. So I'm hoping you can pull back the curtain on this and educate us all a bit about what does it look like to work with an academic editor? What's the process? What kind of services do you provide? Yeah, tell us more about if a faculty member is interested in working with an academic editor, what does that look like?
Yeah, I definitely think that working with an editor is sort of a dirty secret in academia. Nobody or a lot of people don't really want to admit to it. But basically how it works is a scholar will have a project they're working on, whether it's a journal article or, a book proposal or a full book manuscript. Or I've even edited people's job market letters or tenure packets. And we all know how it is when we're writing. You get to the point where you've been over the text so many times, you're in your head about it and you feel stuck and you need somebody to look at it with a fresh perspective. And that's what an editor can do for you, right? When you're in that place where you're stuck, you've been staring at this paper, you need to submit it, you feel horrible because you're not making progress on it. And you get in touch with an editor, don't feel like the paper has to look good or that it has to be. A lot of people tell me that I need to clean it up a bit before I send it to you. Don't worry about that. That's my job, And plus I've been there. I know what it's like to be an academic author. So I totally get it. But basically, a client will contact me. I'll ask them to send me a draft of their paper. I ask them to send the, say, the journal submission guidelines or the publishing requirements for the press. I take a look and I get a sense of how much work needs to be done, how much time it's going to take, and then I send them back with a quote. Some editors charge an hourly rate, but I prefer to charge a per word rate. So I base that on how much time I think and how much work it's gonna need. But I think the benefit to the client is that they know up front exactly what they're going to have to pay. There's no question there. So, you know, I answer any questions as long as we're both on the same page. They let me know their deadline, and then I have them just sign a letter of agreement just to confirm that we understand, you know, what we've agreed to. And then I get to work. And there's different types of editing. I can talk about that if you want me to. But basically, the goal of an editor is to help you get the document published.
Okay. Yeah. Talk to me about the different types of editing. So I could imagine, you know, sometimes you might be making grammatical changes or focusing on the grammar, but what if I just need help understanding, do my arguments make sense because I've been in my head so much? So tell me about those kinds of services or, you know, the different ways you edit. And then does the price differ based on the kind of editing that you're doing?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, well, editors have different very specific categories of editing, but I like to boil them down to two main categories. One is copy editing, which is sort of a red pen edit, where your document is pretty much ready to be published, but it needs to be cleaned up. And so when I get somebody who'd like me to do a copy edit, I read through the text, I correct any, you know, punctuation errors, grammar, typos, I edit the language to make sure the sentences flow clearly, that the argumentation is clear. And I also edit the references list to make sure that everything is cited properly according to whatever the citation style is. I'll format it according to the guidelines that are provided. And then I also cross-check the references in the list with what's cited in the text to make sure that everything cited in the text is included in the references list and vice versa. The goal there is to try to get the paper as ready to publish as possible. And so I will make the edits that I feel confident about. But, you know, obviously sometimes, like if you've forgotten to cite something, I'll leave a comment for you and then you can go and find that information and bring it in. With a developmental edit, that's usually done earlier in the process, and it's usually done on larger projects like books. So if let's say an author wants to turn their dissertation into a book, obviously there's a lot of changes that need to be made stylistically because we're not talking to our dissertation committee anymore. We're talking to a broader audience, and maybe you've got new data or you need to update the literature or whatever, but you could send your dissertation to a developmental editor and they will go through and read the manuscript and give you feedback on what you need to do to turn this into a book. And usually developmental editors will give you a couple of options to fit whatever your budget is. Maybe they will just read through the manuscript and send you a report that's 2 to 3 pages long that says, here's the main points that you need to address in this text. Or if you have a bit more money to spend, they can go much more in depth, leaving comments in the text, suggesting where exactly you need to add material or cut, you know, saying, here, you've repeated this point 17 times, we need to cut this back a little bit, right? In a very nice way, because we're generally very nice and supportive. So if you're working with an editor who's a professional and who understands what they're doing, they're going to offer you a lot of flexibility to fit your budget, to fit your style, to fit whatever it is that you need.
Okay, great. That's so helpful. Now, is academic editing discipline specific?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I mainly work in the social science, because since my background was political science, I mainly work in the social sciences and humanities. But I also I've also edited documents in education, in nursing, in business. And so it's really up to the client, I think, what they feel comfortable with. I find that a lot of business faculty do want somebody who specializes in business editing. They want somebody who's familiar with their terminology and the research. But it really just depends on what the client wants and if they feel like the editor is a good fit.
Okay. I feel like I've been missing out. You know, I've been a faculty member for 10 years and I'm like, how come I have not worked with an academic editor? Just what you said about doing that final round of cleaning things up. I mean, the number of reviews I get back where I have word omissions or grammatical errors or, you know, things like cross-checking the references, I feel like by the time you're ready to submit a manuscript, you are just, I'll talk about myself. I'm so done. Like my eyes are blurred over and I just can't even muster the energy to look at whether I formatted my references correctly. And I click submit and hope for the best. But I think the reviewers are probably going to be a lot more generous if they're getting something that's really clean and tidy, I would imagine.
Yeah, we've all had that snarky reviewer too, who like points out the punctuation errors and stuff, you know, nobody wants to have to deal with that. But yeah, I mean, you said earlier about working with an editor on sabbatical. And I think what you just described is exactly why people need to work with editors in general, but especially on a sabbatical, is your time and energy is limited, right? You have X amount of months to accomplish your goal, whether it's write your book or finish your research or whatever it is, you have a limited amount of time before you have to go back to teaching. And exactly as you described it, when you've poured all of your mental energy and physical energy into writing this paper or this book, you do not want to waste time changing from Chicago to APA style or whatever. And that is exactly what an editor can help you with to save time and to be more productive. You are the expert in your field. You spend your time and energy writing the actual arguments and then hand it over. You know, this is no different than what people in business do, right? If they have a virtual assistant or an executive assistant or whatever, you do the thinking work and then hand it to an editor, because while that editor is refining your references and cleaning up the typos and, you know, formatting the font and all that, you can either relax and recharge or go on to your next project. And so I think this is something that women in particular should take advantage of. And most of my clients are women. I think a lot of them are moms. And we just, because we're having to do all the things, the work and the home stuff together, we're burnt out, you know? I think that's how people get so fried. And if you can pass off, if you have research funds or, you know, some kind of budget that you can use for that, and you can pass off that work to an editor, then that's going to help you personally as well as professionally.
Yeah. And I think sometimes as women and particularly working moms, I think we're so used to juggling so many things that often it doesn't even occur to us that we could take something off of our plate. Right. And I think when it comes to sabbaticals, exactly what you said, and also most of my clients, in fact, all my clients are women. Most of them have kids, most of them have young kids. And so a lot of what they're trying to figure out on their sabbatical is, how can I move my work forward, but also be more present with my family, or spend, you know, not only give my kids what's left over at the end of the day? And I think this is a way where you can use, you know, make your highest contribution or do the work you need to do, and then pass off the work that anyone can do, but an academic editor can do really well, to someone else.
Yeah, I think that, you know, particularly men wouldn't have a problem, you know, handing off these sort of they're not menial, of course, you know, editing is a high level process, but it's stuff that, like you said, that someone else can handle for you. And a man wouldn't have a problem handing that off. But I do agree with you that I think women are often conditioned, or, you know, we're in the habit of always having to do everything for ourselves, or we feel bad putting this on someone else. The way that you're going to be your best self at home and at work is to let somebody help you out.
Yeah. And I think the hardest thing for me, I mean, I always think obviously it would be nice to earn more money, but I'm at a phase in my life right now where time is more precious than money, right? And so I think, like, if you were to say, do you want a course release or more salary? I would say, give me the course release. I need the time, right? And so this is a way that we can free up our time to really focus on the things that matter, whether that's, you know, doing more of the intellectual work or just watching Netflix or going for a run or playing with your kids, whatever that means to you.
Yeah, that's another great point. I think I finally hired an accountant to do my taxes when I realized that I was spending like 16 hours doing my taxes. And I went, I wonder how much money I could be earning in that time doing editing, you know? And I passed it off, and it's way cheaper to hire her than it is for me to try to do it myself.
For sure. So I know that you've also launched this other coaching side to your business. Do you personally still do academic editing?
I do. You know, like I said before, I never thought I would be in business. But over the last few years, in between or while driving my kids back and forth to school and to activities and all that, I've listened to countless hours of marketing and business podcasts and figured out how to attract clients. And so the benefit of that is for the last year or so, I have not done any I've never done any paid ads for editing, but I've not actively sought out clients, and yet they are still finding me. And I have turned my attention in the last 6 months or so to running this course and group coaching program, but I still have people requesting me for editing. And so I sort of take on the projects I really like, and then the ones that I don't want to take on, I pass to, you know, the people in my courses or, you know, other editors that I can make referrals to.
Okay, great. So I will put a link in the show notes to all the ways people can find you. And it sounds like if people want to work with you, they can just reach out to you. I think on your website, you have kind of a form folks can fill out. And then it sounds like if you personally can't do the work, you have a big network of people that you could refer folks.
Yep, exactly.
All right. So now I want to talk about your coaching business. Tell me about that. You help people become academic editors or think about what it might mean to have either a side business or go into this full time and leave academia.
Yeah. About a year ago, you know, I was having all this success in bringing in clients and building my editing business. And I started thinking about how unhappy, not just that I was in academia, but how many other people are so unhappy and burnt out in academia. And I realized that editing, to be honest, can be quite isolating. You're at home, you're emailing with people all the time, but you don't have that many phone calls or Zoom calls with clients. And I was really missing that aspect of teaching. You know, I wanted to sort of be back in a classroom environment, but without all the downsides of that. And so I had this idea that what if I could take my journey from being utterly miserable to now being happier than I ever thought I would be and help other people who are in the same situation? Because I remember when I was there, I was so unhappy, but I had nobody to talk to. Nobody else in my department understood, or they didn't admit it, you know? And right. So I decided that you know, there's nothing else out there, right? There's no one else out there that I've been able to find who is teaching faculty how to start an editing business. And so I developed the digital course, which is now we're up to 7 modules of videos. Basically, I call it the starter pack to start your business, right? It's contract templates and cold email templates and citation style cheat sheets and everything that you need to get started. And when people enroll, they get lifetime access to those materials. But we also have this community that is now up to over 40 current or former faculty, people who have either left already or who are, you know, doing the side hustle or thinking about leaving. And I teach that in 12-week cohorts. So we have one that's coming up starting in March. We'll meet once a week on Zoom for 12 weeks. And I walk everybody through how to apply to editing agencies and publishers to start getting your feet wet and figuring out if you even like editing, how to create your website, how to start marketing, basically all the nuts and bolts to get things started. And we have a Slack channel where all 40 members are in that together. So you get lifetime access to that community as well. And so as you're continuing to build your business, you belong to this group of people who are all in the same boat. They're all former academics or current academics who are trying to start these businesses and doing very well. And you can ask questions and vent, and it's just a fun place to be. It's totally different than academia. You know, I think in academia, everybody's always criticizing you. And so this is a much happier, more supportive place.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I did kind of a boot camp when I was starting my business, and I was getting all this positive feedback from my coach, and I realized in my normal job, I don't get positive feedback unless I get, it kind of feels like unless you publish in, you know, the top tier journal or get the biggest, most prestigious grant or fellowship, you just kind of put your head down and keep going. And I was like, oh, this actually feels good. I like positive reinforcement.
Yeah, it's, there's quite a transformation that people go through when they start in this course and in our program. And I see them every time. I mean, I'm on the third cohort. We're starting the fourth cohort in March. I see them go from feeling so, many of them just feel worthless, like they have nothing to add, you know, that there's no way. These are people with, some of them have two PhDs, you know, and tons of teaching experience, tons of publishing experience. And they feel like they have nothing to contribute to the world. And the work that we do, a lot of it is just mental, you know, changing your identity from this faculty member who is so exhausted and so beaten down to somebody who feels like not only can they achieve success, but they deserve to achieve success. And it's amazing, you know, it's that I don't like, I would do this forever just for that feeling of seeing people go from the worst to the most that they've ever, you know, the best that they've ever felt.
Yeah, that's so gratifying. Like, what a contribution you're making to help people kind of see beyond their academic identities and see their self-worth outside of academia. And just, I know from the experience of working with people and seeing that transformation, it's just like, you feel so good when you get off of that Zoom call, like, oh, something I did today made a difference. And I think in academia, the timelines are so long, you know, like I've had a revise and resubmit that's been under review for 7 months now. And so there's no immediate gratification or feedback, but in this, in the business world, when you're working with people and changing their lives, it's such a powerful thing.
It is. I absolutely love it. And, you know, I couldn't be happier.
So you mentioned that a lot of people who join your programs kind of aren't able to see the contributions that they can make beyond maybe what they're doing as an academic. So why do you think academic editing is such a good fit for academics who either want to do this as a side business or want to leave academia and do it full time like you did?
Yeah, the framework that I teach in my course, or what I tell people when they come into the community, is that if you have any kind of graduate level training, you don't necessarily have to have published, but you know, if you have, that's even better. You have an innate sense of what scholarly writing is supposed to sound like. And the course that I teach, I don't teach grammar and punctuation and how to edit. I'm focused really on the building the business aspects. So I assume that if people are coming to me to become editors, that they're good writers, that they understand, you know, academic literature. And so I tell them that you have this innate sense within you of how to edit. You have probably authored or co-authored papers, you have supervised student research, you understand how to give feedback, you have all those skills within you, even if you've never called it editing. And so what we do in the course is I set the community members up with applying to editing agencies and publishers, and I call it on-the-job training. So these are sort of these initial positions that they can get where they're getting paid to do editing work. It's not a ton of pay, but you know, you're sort of getting training and getting paid at the same time, and you're honing your editing skills. So there is a lot about professional editing that we don't really do as authors, right? The difference between an N dash and an M dash, or you know, maybe you need to brush up on your punctuation rules a bit. But all of that is minor and can be done very easily through this kind of on-the-job training where you're getting feedback from these companies. And so I think that anyone who thinks they might enjoy being an editor, that they're, you know, they're the kind of person who's always catching typos and stuff, don't let the business aspect scare you off, because you have the skills and the knowledge to do the work. And it's not hard, as we were saying earlier, it's not hard to start a business. You need a laptop and access to Microsoft Word and the internet. And that's about it to start out freelancing. And, you know, we give you the tools in the course to how to design your website, how to spruce up your LinkedIn profile, how to start networking. That's really all it is to start attracting clients, is just making sure that you do know how to edit. And if you're in academia, you do. And then putting the other pieces in place so that people start just knowing that you exist and how to contact you.
So what are the pros of having your own academic business? And then what are any of the downsides that you've experienced?
I think the biggest benefit is that flexibility. You know, so many people, like we were saying earlier, they think academia is flexible. And I've heard so many people say they're scared to leave academia because they don't want to lose that flexibility. But I could tell you there's nothing more flexible than owning your own business, because yesterday my kids had a snow day. Before that, they were sick. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I'm not stressed out being home with them, you know, trying to do some work while they're watching a movie or something. It does get a little stressful. But when I need to be there for them, I can be, you know, and, you know, I work every day from 7 a.m. until about 1 o'clock. I eat something and then I go pick up my kids from school. And that's the end of my day. You know, if I have a tight deadline, I can work in the evenings or maybe on a weekend if I need to. But that's the beauty of it, is whatever schedule you need to have, you can craft the business around that.
I would imagine the nice thing about editing is it's not, you can do that in your own time. You know, it doesn't require you to be on Zoom. So sort of, like you said, editing can be a little lonely, but at the same time, you can, if you work best at 11 p.m., you can do your editing then.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're a night owl, stay up late and then sleep in. If you're sometimes, like what I'll do is I'll wake up at 4 a.m. because my kids sometimes wake up, early anyway. And, you know, whatever it is that works for you, you can design your business around. And I think, you know, you asked the downside. I do think the isolation is probably the biggest downside, because before I started this course, it really was just me working from home. There are some Facebook groups of editors that you can interact with. But I really missed the, you know, the face-to-face, even just on Zoom, talking to other people, laughing, you know, making jokes about things just to lighten the mood, especially nowadays. But, you know, there are ways around that. There are editors' communities, aside from mine, that are emerging, that are, you know, social groups, that are professional organizations. And even just having that Slack channel that we have to pop in and, you know, say, hey, how's everybody doing? What are your wins and woes we like to share? Even just having that and then occasional meetings on Zoom is a very easy way to overcome that kind of solitary life.
Yeah, for sure. And so if someone wanted to test the waters, because I know so many of my clients are kind of see their sabbatical as an opportunity to think about, like, what else can I be doing? Are there other, should I start a side business? Or, you know, quite frankly, now people are also thinking, should I figure out an exit strategy? Because we don't know what's going to happen in academia in the current free fall of the US government or whatever. You know, anyway. We're not going to get into that. We'll keep it light. But if someone wanted to test the waters with academic editing, obviously, I think signing up for your group program would be a great way to start. Is there anything that kind of comes before that? If they weren't ready to make that investment, what would you advise them to do?
Absolutely. You know, if you, probably the easiest thing to do is just to talk to your colleagues. You know, if there's somebody that you trust, talk to them and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing a little bit of editing work on the side. You don't have to say if you're thinking of leaving academia, maybe you just want to make some extra money or something. Do you have any papers that I can edit for you, you know, and I can help save you time? You want to focus on the benefit for them. Do you have any grad students that need an editor to look over their text, you know? Just charge a low rate. You can go to the Editorial Freelancers Association, the EFA. They have they do a survey every year where they look at editors' rates. You can look at that for a an estimate of what you should charge, and just try it out. You know, see how it goes. If you want to keep things a bit more discreet, you can apply to an editing agency. There are hundreds of them, but, you know, several are eContent Pro, Inego, Scribendi. I'm not sure if they're hiring right now, but just look up an academic editing agency and submit a one-page resume, and you can tell them I can only take it one article a week. They can hire you, and that's another way for you to get started.
Okay. That's great. And are there any, this is making me wonder, are there any sort of formal licensing or credentialing for editors that someone would have to be thinking about?
So there are various editing certificate programs. The University of California at San Diego has one. I think University of Chicago also has one. But those are not specific to academic editing. And I also have heard from scholars who have done those programs and they found them to be not very helpful. And so what I would suggest is finding books that you can brush up on your punctuation and grammar. There's one called the Copy Editor's Handbook, and they also have a workbook that goes along with it. Or just, you know, look up, just do a Google search for academic copy editing tricks or something like that. And you can read about things you can do. There's also a program called Ideas on Fire, and they have a course on academic editing. I think it's about $300. And so that's another option. Really, just to get started, if you're trying to figure out if this is right for you, you can start out for these agencies or friends, colleagues, and see if you like it, and then choose whether or not you want to invest in some kind of certificate. But it's absolutely not necessary.
Yeah, I think that's helpful to know because I feel like as academics, we've been conditioned that like you can't do anything until you're an expert in it. And so this idea of just diving in and starting might actually feel a little bit scary to some people. But I think like you said before, if you've gone to graduate school and have any experience publishing, you probably know you already know a lot of what you need to know to be an academic editor.
Absolutely. And it's really not that different than what you're doing if you're co-authoring. You know, if somebody sends you their version of the paper and you have to go through and change the language or correct the typos, that's exactly what we do. There's just, you know, you have to be a little bit better at Microsoft Word so you can get through it faster.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Paulina, this was so great. I really enjoyed hearing about more about academic editing, and this is going to be, I will probably be filling out your form online soon. And I hope that it's really helped our audience think more about the benefits of working with an academic editor, and that if folks have an interest in becoming an academic editor themselves, that they'll reach out to you and join your program.
Thanks so much, Bethany. It was a great time to be here.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.